tanto.
Welcome, listeners, to International Voices, a podcast highlighting the backgrounds and experiences of international students studying in the United States. This is episode number 4. My name is John, and I'm here with Rui Tsuchiyama. She is an outdoor recreation major from Oita, Japan. She is very enthusiastic about all the wonderful outdoor adventure opportunities we have here in Utah. Rui, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting.
You're welcome. We're very glad that you're here, and we're excited to hear what kind of experiences you've had. So can you tell us a little bit about your hometown?
Yes. So my hometown is called Yufu in Oita, which is located in very south of Japan. And the population is about 35,000, which is, I don't know, not that big.
It's similar to Cedar City.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like a big city, which is like a so small town, which I like.
Is Yufu, is that on the ocean? Are you near the water?
We are close to the ocean, but also we have mountains and volcanoes. So we are rich in like so many geographies.
I think that's one of the really cool things about Japan as a country is there's so much geographic diversity.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the islands are mountains and volcanoes, right?
Yes. And we have like a great many national parks. And we have like 33 national parks from all the way from south to the north. So it's great to visit.
And you know a few things about national parks,
yeah.
Right? Rui has a great story about how she found SUU, which you'll hear a little bit later.
Yeah.
But it has to do with the national parks. Good. For the listeners, I spent 2 years living in Japan, so I'm very excited to talk to Rui today about her background and her hometown in Japan. And I feel like I can relate with some of my experiences as well in Japan. I lived in a different part of Japan than where Rui's from, but certainly had some pretty amazing experiences there. What do you miss most about your hometown?
The one thing I miss most is ocean and seafood, because here in the Utah it's so dry and we could never get any fresh seafood. So.
Have you tried sushi in Utah?
Yeah, but the one I tried was like a California roll, which has an avocado and like a meat in it. It wasn't authentic, but it was still good. Yeah.
In Japan, do Japanese people eat like California rolls?
No.
Is that an American creation?
Yeah, definitely it's Americanized. But I like it because sometimes when I was in college and I didn't have money to buy fish, I pour soy sauce onto the avocado, which makes the taste more like a fish, like a real fish. So I did that.
So that's a Japanese college student's version of sushi?
Or maybe only me.
American students think about ramen because American ramen is not really typical Japanese ramen, right?
Yeah.
You have instant ramen here,
uh-huh.
which is popular for college kids because it costs almost nothing.
Yeah.
And it's easy to make.
Uh-huh.
But there's real Japanese ramen at restaurants is completely different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a fan of ramen?
Yeah, I like it, but it depending on which type of ramen. Because some of the ramen are so oily, which I really hate.
So there's different styles of ramen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the interesting thing is that we have different types of ramen depending on locations, you know. So, like, some place has a soup which is made from, like, fish. And some people use soup which is made from pork. So, yeah.
What's your preference?
I like pork soup, ramen. Yeah.
Me too. I'm with you on that one. The fish one's not my favorite.
Yeah.
But to listeners who have never had real, authentic Japanese ramen, it is a completely different experience than eating instant ramen. There's some really good places in Las Vegas that, that serve authentic Japanese ramen. Good. Anything else that you miss about your hometown? The ocean, seafood?
I think just people, my friends and family. And I'm not good at keeping in touch. Like, I don't send, like, message and I don't text. So sometimes I just send a letter to them.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have one older brother and one older sister, so I'm the youngest.
You're the baby of the family.
Yeah.
Where do your brother and sister live?
My older sister, she lives in Osaka, and which is like a middle of Japan. And then my brother, he lives in Tokyo. And then my brother, he has studied abroad to South Korea, and he speaks South Korean, so he's working for the Korean airline. Yeah. And my sister, who is getting married next summer, she works for which company is that, but she travels a lot. Like, a few weeks ago, she went to Australia and New Zealand. So
cool. Did she inspire you to travel?
Yeah.
Or were you the inspiration?
So when I was a little, she was my sister. She went a school trip to New Zealand. And like at that time, I have never been out of my country, you know. So I was so envy to her, you know. So yeah, she definitely inspired me to, you know, go outside.
That's the same from my sister.
Mm-hmm.
I have an older sister, and she traveled to Vietnam by herself when she was 18.
Oh.
And I was 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents thought she was crazy. And my sister is someone that will just do something no matter what people tell her,
yeah.
Even if they say it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I really admire about her. But she definitely inspired me to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to travel when I was older, I remember telling my parents I was going to Costa Rica by myself.
Yeah.
And I expected to have a similar reaction.
Uh-huh.
And they just said, okay, let us know when you get there. Let us know that you're alive. I thought, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Well, at least she laid the
uh-huh.
the path for me.
Yeah, you're the guy, so.
Yeah, that's true. There,
yeah.
It is a difference for a guy traveling alone than a girl, too. Do you think there are any popular misconceptions about Japan?
Yes, a lot, actually. So, the first misconception that you can think about is that people expect us to know about animation and comic books and stuff, but like not all of us know about like those stuff, and I'm not that kind of person. And sometimes my American friends ask me, like, do you know Naruto or do you know like One Piece or other animations? And when I say it, I don't know anything about it. I've never read about that, and they say like, you're not Japanese. And I feel so sad. And like even the Nepali students and other international students ask me the same thing. So I think it's a big misconception about Japan.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think a lot of American perceptions of Japanese definitely revolve around those elements of pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's often what attracts a lot of Americans to
mm-hmm.
Japan. But there's so much more to Japanese culture than just what we see in anime and cartoons.
It's just like pop culture is so popular, too popular, and like it's such a big thing to attract people. But like if you learn more about Japan, like there are more like a better things in, you know.
How about Japanese people?
So many people think that Japanese are quiet, and we talk, like some of my friends tell me that, why are you so quietly, and like I've never met like quiet person as you, you know. But yeah, we speak a lot. If we speak in native language, it's because I think like the reason they think we are quiet is that we get so nervous when we speak in foreign language, you know. We are not that, we didn't have a like experience to express ourselves in foreign language. So I think that's the one reason that we look like quiet.
So if people talk to you in Japanese, they would realize that you're not actually as quiet as you might seem here in the United States. I think when I first went to Japan, I had so many ideas about what I expected Japanese people to be like, about what I expected Japanese students to be like. And I'll tell you, my first day of teaching, all of my stereotypes were completely blown away by my students, because I expected, I think Americans had this idea of Japanese students as being very serious, very quiet, very studious, always listening, writing, taking notes. So I walked into my first class, and there were kids literally running around the room. There was one kid who was standing up on the desk, and he had taken off his pants and was swinging them above his head. I'm not joking. This is a high school, by the way.
Oh my gosh.
So these are like 15 to 17-year-old kids. And I just, being a new teacher, I thought, what have I gotten myself into?
Which kind of high school did you go?
It was a place called Kitaotsu High School in Shiga, Shiga Prefecture, which is in the center of Japan near Kyoto. And it was a school that was very famous for its sports, especially for baseball, which usually means that they're not well known for their academics.
That makes sense.
So these students were not the most serious students, especially English class. I think a lot of the students didn't see the benefit of English for them. So it was an experience for sure. But I think that really showed me that there's all types of people everywhere, and that a lot of our stereotypes about people maybe aren't true.
Like in speaking of sports, like athletes, so I saw the one news with like a famous darts player, and he won the competition, okay, and some guy was interviewing him, but he can't speak English at all, but he was like replying so confidently, like me, no English, I can't speak English, and he started singing, so I think he's the example that Japanese, not all the Japanese people are quiet, and
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and that also goes to show, even if you're a good sports player in Japan, go to English class. It could be important in the future, right? Great. Any other thoughts about what people should know about Japan?
So when I talk to some people who have traveled to Japan, they say, I've been to Tokyo, or I've been to Osaka, Kyoto, and it's great, you know. They like typically go to big city, big town, but I want to like emphasize that they're better place to visit, like national parks and, you know,
there are some really insanely beautiful places in Japan that I never expected. And you're right, like anywhere from beaches, you can go snowboarding up in Hokkaido.
Yeah.
You can go hiking in so many places. it really is a beautiful, beautiful country.
Yeah, there are so many, like us, more activities that you can do if you research or you ask me about it. That's one thing I wanted to, like, present.
Good. Yeah, and I think the best thing you can do is ask someone from there.
Yeah.
So that's what I always encourage people to do, is find someone from where you want to go and ask them where you should go visit.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more with Rui. All right, we're back here with Rui from Japan. Rui, when did you first come to the United States?
So I came to the U.S. 2 years ago, but I haven't stayed here for like 2 years. I had to go back to my country. And the last time I came to the United States was, I stayed in Montana. I was studying there. University of Montana. I don't know, my first impression about the United States is that everything is so huge, like people and food, and like even like cars, like people drive like crazily big Jeep and trucks and like Dodge and like stuff. And I think it's something like really surprised me, especially like since I'm so short, I feel like I'm the like hobbit or something, like different kind of species. Yeah.
Well, especially in a place like Montana.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, a pretty rural state in the Northwest where people drive trucks, they drive SUVs.
Yeah.
And Montana is just, there's a lot of open space too.
Yeah. One time I was like walking down the main street, and then people drive like just besides me, by, like huge trucks, and they looking down me like so weirdly. I feel so uncomfortable.
You feel really small.
Yeah.
So did you arrive in Montana? Was it in winter or summer? What season was it?
It was summer, and yeah, it was really good that Montana is so dry. I mean, Utah is dry as well, but. Because Japanese summer is crazily humid.
It is. That was something that really shocked me about Japan, is I had no idea how hot it would be.
Yeah.
But it was so humid and so hot. I used to have to ride my bicycle to school, and it was about 2 miles uphill from my apartment.
Oh, my God.
And I had a tiny little, it's called a mamachari.
Oh, yeah.
You know mamachari. It's like a little bike with a basket on the front for like groceries, and I had 3 speeds, which was like a nice bike compared to a lot of them. But I would ride that bike to school in summer, and I would get to school and I would just be soaked in sweat.
Oh.
And the teachers that I worked with would pull into the school and say, "Atsui desu ne," which in Japanese means "it's hot, isn't it?"
Yeah.
And I would just be so angry. Like, you have no idea in your air-conditioned cars. So that was a shock to me, for sure. Especially,
yeah.
I'm from a dry place. I'm from Oklahoma, which gets, it can get humid, but nothing like Japan.
It's like sauna. Like, really. Once you open the door and you, like, step into the outside, it's like, oh my God, I feel like I will be steamed.
It really, it's like stepping into a sauna. You're totally right. And when I remember walking down the stairs of my apartment. I was on the 3rd floor. And by the time I got to the ground floor, I would be sweating walking down the stairs. I'd just think, oh no, I have to bring changes of clothes to school. So how did you end up in Utah? If you spent, how long did you spend in Montana?
I spent 9 months over there because I had 2 semesters up there. And then I was going backpacking with my international friends who is from Spain and Czech Republic. And we spent a lot of time outdoors, like Yellowstone and National Forest in Seattle, and also in glaciers and many other great outdoor settings.
Nice. So when you went back to Japan and then you came to Utah, right?
Yeah. So after I came back to Japan, I had one year left in college, so I stayed in Tokyo, which is pretty different from Montana and Utah. And then, yeah, I just came to Utah. But
how did you find out about Utah or about the university here?
So I was looking for Google Map, and then I found the Capitol Reef, which I have visited before. And then I really like the geography, you know. And I found one university which is like surrounded by national parks, which is in Utah. And yeah, that's the only reason I chose Utah.
I love that story because so often students find out about our university and they say, "Oh, it's so cool also that you're near so many national parks, so that you're designated the University of the Parks."
Uh-huh.
But to me, that story is so cool because you thought first, I want to be close to national parks. Let's see if there's a university close by.
Yeah.
I think that's such a great way to find a place. So do you visit the parks pretty often?
Hey, Yoda.
Uh-huh.
Not really. But I went to a couple of hiking trips and canyoneering, and after I come here, I think I've done like so many things that I've never done in my life, like canyoneering and horsemanship, like horse riding and snowboarding.
Yeah.
So I think I'm enjoying outdoor activities in Utah.
You're definitely taking advantage of all of the great outdoor activities
yeah.
we have. And that's something we try to encourage students to do because really it's one of the unique parts about Utah. Utah is like an outdoor wonderland.
Uh-huh. And this is something that I could never experience in Japanese university, you know, because they don't rent gear to the students. They don't have outdoor center and they don't have anyone who teach about outdoor, except for you joining outdoor clubs,
So would you say American universities
mm-hmm.
are a little bit more diverse in what they can offer students for the experience?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, yeah, this is something I want to introduce to Japanese colleges to encourage students to go outside more and more.
That's something that we see a lot with international students is they're very surprised at the kind of services that are available here
mm-hmm.
and how an American university is really like a community.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of other countries, I think it's a lot more focused on just providing an education only
yes.
in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that I think is really great about the experience here
mm-hmm.
as it for international students
yes.
is we try to provide a lot of opportunities to get involved in the community, in the outdoors,
uh-huh.
some of those things that really create a more holistic
mm-hmm.
experience.
Yeah, it's so helpful for us because we don't have a car and we don't have transportation. So it's great to, you know, have support to go outside. And also I just went to the career office today to complete my resume, and the guy there was so helpful for me.
Definitely. And we, again, I think that's something that surprises international students. So we try to introduce them to that and say, no, we actually have a place on campus where you can go and they'll help you with that. And then also for providing transportation. It's hard to live in Cedar without a without a car. So we try to take students on trips and get them active and involved. What do you think was the most difficult aspect of adjusting to life here?
Okay, so there are many difficulties for me, but the most difficult aspect of adjusting to life here is that, like, expressing myself. For example, in classes, I have opportunities to give presentation in front of many people, but I don't get used to express myself, you know, because I'm from collectivist culture, which is like so strong collectivist culture. So we are educated to be keeping quiet, you know, to act like others. So expressing like my uniqueness and individuality is like pretty hard for me.
Have you noticed other places where you feel that cultural difference between that collectivist culture in Japan and a little bit more individualist here in the United States?
So one thing I can apply to that idea is job hunting. So here in the U.S., there is a word, business culture, which I didn't understand what it was it. And people can dress like what they think is business, like, you know. But in Japan, we dressed almost like a identical suit, black suits. We all we are all expected to dress like same.
So everybody that's trying to get a job will wear the same suit.
Yeah.
The same kind of tie.
Identical.
And that's seen as a good practice for job hunting? Like, if I wore a gray suit, for example, would that be a negative for me if I wore something out of the normal?
Because, like, if you wear gray suits, gray business suits, like, employers, they would think that these people is not follow the rule, you know. These people would not listen to us, you know.
Like, they're rebellious or something? They're going to cause problems. That's really interesting. Have you experienced other times when you feel like there's that challenge of expressing yourself outside of class?
Outside of class? Yes. Like, even in parties when I go, where I go, it's like everyone is so outgoing, you know, keep talking, and I don't have time to talk, you guys gotta pause, give me, opportunity to talk, and then,
Because a lot of times at a party in America, there'll be someone talking, and then someone talks louder, and then someone talks louder over them, right? It's almost competitive. To me, that's really interesting. There's a phrase that keeps coming to my head that I learned when I was in Japan, and that is, the nail that sticks out gets hammered down. Can you explain what that means?
Okay, so basically, it means that if you are part of the groups, you have to act like others. You don't have to, you shouldn't be standout. You know, if you, be standout, you will be knocked down.
You'll be knocked down to where everybody else is, right?
Uh-huh.
How do you think that expresses itself? Like, where does that come from? Do you think it's just the society expects that of people and they feel like they have to conform?
I think it's society, and also our education system is closely related to that idea, I think. Because, So if I think about my experience when I was in elementary school and junior high school, and even in high school, we had really, really strict rules. Okay, so first of all, we have to wear the school uniforms, and we have to cut our nails, and they check actually, and we even have a rules for socks. You know what, I couldn't wear the socks with the lines, which has lines.
Just white socks.
Completely white. Yeah. So I don't know.
So you feel like Japanese kids are taught from a young age to obey the rules.
Yeah.
To not question.
Uh-huh. I know that the teachers, they have strict inspections for students, and then if they see something mistakes or something different, they will tell you should follow this, without explaining the reasons.
Just because it's a rule.
Yeah.
You should follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I noticed when I was in school, I didn't realize this was a rule, but in our school you couldn't dye your hair.
Oh.
So I don't know if that's always the rules in all high schools, but I remember our students would, they would dye a piece of their hair that's underneath, that's on the inside. And I remember seeing girls in the hallway and they would be showing their friends that they had a streak of blonde or green. And being the foreign teacher, I didn't care. That's not my responsibility. So I remember them trying to cover their dyed hair.
Yeah.
And I would kind of laugh and smile at them, and they knew I wasn't going to tell on them.
Uh-huh.
But I certainly saw that a lot when I was in school. I saw students very hesitant. Because in my English class, I would always ask. I would tell students, please make mistakes.
Uh-huh.
Please ask questions. And I could tell immediately that was not what they were used to.
Yeah.
It was a long process to encourage students and to get them to express themselves, to ask questions, to make mistakes.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Which is so important in language learning.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm so surprised to see my Arabic friends. They just started learning English 3 years ago or something. But they speak more than us. And we started learning when we were 13 or so. I don't know how many years later. How many years ago, but I'm so surprised to see how they are so outgoing, even if they make mistakes,
I think it has a lot to do with the methods of teaching as well.
Yeah.
I noticed that in Japan it's a lot of writing on the board and then copying or translating, and there's not a lot of speaking practice.
Yes, and even in speaking practice, we just repeat what the teacher says. Repeat after me, and blah, 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 blah. So,
yeah. Yeah, definitely different styles of instruction. Can you think of something that surprised you after you came to the United States?
Yes. So, one of the things I so surprised is the food, how they eat food. I saw some of my friends put peanut butter on the celery, and that's it's vegetable or peanut butter. How can they think of that,
That might be the only way that some people will eat vegetables, is if you put peanut butter on it. No, that's that's something that as kids we're... That's a treat for kids that'll get them to eat celery.
Yeah, why don't you put just a dressing and sauce or something It was so weird.
Any other food items that you just thought were crazy when you first got here?
Cheese balls.
The little snack cheese balls?
Yeah, but I saw a huge box of cheese balls, and I don't think people can consume all of those.
You're right. That's a pretty ridiculous thing. I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Yeah. And okay, one thing is that like there are so many foods like or snacks which is colorful, like artificially colored. You know.
Yeah, like you can tell it's not natural. That it's
yeah.
some chemical that
uh-huh.
made it bright green.
Mm-hmm.
Especially candy.
Yeah, and also the drinks, the blue. Hawaii? I don't know what that way is. The blue drink?
It's mostly chemicals.
Oh.
All that really healthy stuff, right?
Yeah.
Also, did you notice portion sizes are bigger here than in Japan?
Oh, yeah. Everything is bigger.
I remember going to fast food places in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I'd go to McDonald's in Japan,
yeah.
which, by the way, is completely different than in the United States. I think mostly because people there think of McDonald's is like a pretty nice place to go
uh-huh.
eat, and like my students would take dates to McDonald's.
Oh,
yeah, like the students
dates?
Would go out, like boyfriend and girlfriend
uh-huh.
would go out for dinner at McDonald's,
oh.
and I would see them there sometimes. I thought it was so funny just because
uh-huh.
that's not our idea of a date spot.
Yeah.
But and they have different food too, but
yeah, McDonald's,
the portion sizes are smaller. Though.
Yeah, like McDonald's is a kind of stereotypes of American. For us, you know, by the way, we call it McDonald's. I can't. McDonald's.
They call it McDo.
Yeah.
For short, for abbreviated,
yeah.
right? And I remember when I first got there, kids would always ask me, John, in Japanese, it's McDo ski, which means, do you like McDonald's? But I had no idea what that meant. But all the time, John, how many times do you eat at McDonald's per week? I would think, what? I eat there like once a year, twice a year. But yeah, it's certainly a big difference there.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we are going to be right back with Rui. We have some interesting facts about Japan. I'm going to run by her and see what kind of response she has. Stay tuned. Okay, Rui.
Okay.
I did some research,
mm-hmm.
and I found some interesting facts about Japan. I knew some of these already, but there's so many interesting facts about Japan, I feel like it's hard to choose. But I'm going to read some of them to you, and I just want you to react
uh-huh.
to give us some more information, maybe if you have some more. Okay.
Okay.
The first one is raw horse meat is a popular food in Japan.
Oh, yes. It's such a great thing, but it's so expensive so that we can't eat a lot, but, like, oh, yes.
So it's a delicacy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you like it?
I like it a lot, and it's so good for health, you know. It doesn't contain, like, a lot of fat, so I love that horse meat.
Is that popular in different parts of the country? Like, are there places where certain foods are more popular than others? Like, is raw horse popular where you live?
Oh, yeah. So, the raw horse is popular in the prefecture called Fukuoka, which is just next to my hometown.
So, that's in the south of Japan
yes.
as well, right?
Uh-huh.
My experience in Japan, I ate so many bizarre things. I never got the chance to eat raw horse meat, which I wish that I would have.
Yeah.
Sorry for anyone who's a horse lover out there,
yeah.
but I ate some pretty crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In Shigaken, where I was living,
mm-hmm.
there's something called funazushi. Do you know funazushi?
I think I'm part of
it. It's raw fish
mm-hmm.
that they stuff with rice,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll bury it underground,
uh-huh.
and they'll let it ferment, so it'll be like rotten. There's 1 year or 2 year or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
3 years is the most expensive. It's like maybe, it might be $100
for
a fish.
Yeah, I know that, but I smell so bad.
It smells horrible, and it tastes not as bad as it smells, but it kind of tastes like old fishy cheese, which sounds really disgusting, but if you pair it with some sake, it makes it a lot better.
Does it mean like if you're so drunk and you don't know the taste, or?
It definitely helps. I couldn't tell if it was it was a combination of things. I think it was the excitement of the event and maybe a little bit of the sake too.
Yeah.
It numbs the taste buds a little bit. The other thing I had that was kind of crazy was raw chicken hearts.
Oh yeah.
Have you had those?
Uh-huh.
I had cooked chicken hearts and they were really good. But the raw ones were very, very chewy.
Yeah, the texture is, I don't know how to express, but so gross.
It's very difficult. That one was not very fun. I didn't really
like
that very
ooh.
Much. But I tried it, and that's what it's all about, right? Next fact. There are 4 different writing systems in Japan. So you have 4 different ways to write.
Mm-hmm.
You have romaji.
Oh, yeah.
Katakana, hiragana, and kanji. So let's go through them. So romaji is what?
Romaji is, okay, so we use alphabet for romaji, but...
it's like the English alphabet.
Yeah.
Right? The Roman script. So you use that on... There'll be signs written in romaji, right?
Yeah.
So you can, if you don't read Japanese, you can go to Japan, you can read some of the signs, right?
Yeah.
But then there's also 3 Japanese scripts, right? Katakana. What's katakana for?
Katakana is for expressing foreign word, but it's its originally comes from hiragana, which we'll learn next.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So katakana is like for words they take from English, right?
Yes.
So what's an example?
Like banana.
Uh-huh.
Like banana.
Banana, you say banana.
Yeah.
So you would write that in katakana.
Yeah. And like choco, which means chocolate.
Choco.
Yeah.
So the great thing about this is if you don't know how to read Japanese, you can learn katakana very easily.
Yes.
And this saved me so many times in restaurants because I learned how to read katakana in maybe the first 2 or 3 days I was there. And then I would go to a restaurant and I would just look for katakana. It looks very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I would look and I would sound it out. So I would say, pizza. Pizza.
Yeah.
Pizza. Oh, pizza. And then I would know what I was ordering,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's one way to tell some of those English words. But it's not always English, right?
Uh-huh.
It might be from Spanish or it might be from German.
Yeah, we never know.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So sometimes you have to kind of figure that out.
Yeah.
Hiragana and kanji are used for
Japanese
words.
And Chinese character and Japanese character, I mean kanji, is kind of similar, you know, but sometimes even if it's the same Chinese character, it means different thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be the same
mm-hmm.
character, right?
Yeah.
But it might be it's pronounced differently.
Differently, yeah.
And those characters can be pronounced differently depending on what's around them in the sentence too,
uh-huh.
right?
Kanji is crazy.
Kanji is very crazy. I learned about 30 kanji when I was there for 2 years. I didn't spend a lot of time studying. I spent most of my time trying to talk to people.
Oh, that's better.
Sometimes in the bars. I figured that's where I did most of my studying was
did
in the
izakaya.
Izakaya.
Yeah.
Izakayas are like traditional Japanese
yeah.
pubs, right?
Mm-hmm. But the good thing for izakaya is that you can get your own room. So you can get your private space in like inexpensive.
Exactly.
Room.
Yeah, it's nice to have a big group of friends and you can get
yeah.
your private room and have a bunch of food and drinks.
Yeah.
Speaking of private rooms.
Yeah.
So, are you a karaoke fan?
Oh.
Do you sing karaoke?
Yes.
You do. Okay. Have you noticed a difference between karaoke in the United States and in Japan?
Yeah, like I don't even know karaoke exists in the U.S. because like people sing like randomly, you know, like they don't have a like limited space. They don't have a room to sing, and they just sing wherever they want.
That was surprising to me, because karaoke in Japan, you have a private room.
Yes.
You rent with your friends.
Yes.
And you have drinks and hang out in your room and sing with your friends. In the United States, we just sing for the whole bar.
No.
Or the whole restaurant. Well, like, you've seen our, we have karaoke nights here.
Yeah.
We have one microphone, and then you sing for everybody.
Yeah.
Right? It's very different.
That sounds so nerve-wracking. Like, I think, I definitely like the Japanese karaoke better. Because I don't have to care, like, what people think about my voice, you know.
Me too, I'm with you. You also don't have to wait as long.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
You can sing, if you have five friends, then you can trade off there. I had some pretty good experiences singing karaoke in Japan. The next one, when you eat noodles in Japan, is it true that it's polite to slurp to make noise?
Yeah. Like, and which I can't do that, actually.
You can?
No, I try to practice, but some people cannot do that. Yeah.
Which is very rude in the United States.
Oh.
To make noise when you eat. But it's something that I practiced. Mm-hmm. I got some pretty good noodle slurping technique. I had some good teachers.
You couldn't be Japanese.
I try. You know, it was, unfortunately, I will never look like I'm Japanese. So no matter how good my Japanese is, people will always know where I'm from.
Yeah. The same for me, Jim.
Exactly. Vending machines in Japan sell beer, hot and cold coffee, cigarettes, other things. There's almost so many things you can buy from a vending machine.
And did you know that they also sell noodles, noodles?
Like hot noodles?
Yeah.
Like prepared and ready to eat? Wow.
Somebody was making fun of the vending machine, saying that like somebody's behind the vending machine is making
cooking.
Like,
is that really what's happening?
No,
it might be. I don't know. You never know. That's really cool. It's so there's so many things in Japan and so many little features that are very convenient about life in Japan.
Yeah.
Public transportation is like amazingly efficient.
Efficient.
Yes,
but it's always so crowded. Yeah.
One of the facts here, it says, sometimes the trains are so crowded, railway staff are employed to cram passengers inside.
Yes.
Just to push people.
Yes, yes. It happens like almost every day, like for rush hours. And some of the staffs, some of the people are like even screaming, like, don't go right into the train, it's so full.
Mm-hmm. And they just push you in. The funniest part to me is they're all wearing white gloves.
Yeah.
Like they look very formal and they have their people pushing gloves on.
So they don't have to worry about that their hand is caught with the door.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. Interesting. I was just really glad that I'm taller than most Japanese people.
Yeah. I'm so unfortunate to live this short because sometimes I couldn't even breathe. And because I'm so short. So there was a guy just next to me standing, and he's so old and he's wearing the black business suits, but it was summer and he was maybe so in a hurry and he was sweating over so much. And
so was your face like in his arm?
Yeah.
Oh.
And then his breath was coming just over my face and like, please, can you stop breathing?
Everything about that sounds
awful.
Yeah. I just remember being so glad that I was
a
foot above everyone else. I was thinking, the air up here is so clean, so free up here.
Yeah.
I definitely felt bad for people that were shorter than me. I had a bit of an advantage there. Okay, the last one. Do you know about fugu?
Yes.
Have you ever tried fugu?
Yes. Yes, definitely. So,
can you explain what fugu is?
Fugu is a kind of fish, and it's like a expand.
We call it a blowfish.
So
they're the fish that suck in water and then get bigger, right?
Oh. So it has a poison. So it's kind of poisonous fish. But if you remove the poison part and cook it, it tastes so good. But this one is also so expensive. And my hometown is so famous for this fish.
I want to try it so badly.
Yes.
I didn't get the chance to try it because it is expensive. And I heard the facts here say it takes 7 to 10 years to train to become a chef to prepare it because it's so dangerous, right?
Yeah. And I know that there were some stores which were sued because they hired some chefs that they don't qualify to remove poisonous part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So unqualified chefs and people could die? Is it deadly?
It's illegal, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to try it still. Yeah. No matter the dangers, I think it just sounds so interesting.
We make alcohol drink with using the fish.
Oh, the
tail.
Uh-huh, the tail?
We put the fish tails inside the sake. And then we'll heat it up.
Oh,
it's so good.
Really? That's interesting. What do you call it?
Hidezake.
Hidezake.
Yeah.
I'll remember that for next time I'm there.
My family, I used to go to celebrate things to the Fugu store, Fugu restaurant. Yeah, so great.
So listeners, if you are preparing to eat Fugu, make sure you have a chef that knows what he's doing. If your tongue starts to go numb, you might wonder what's happening. Rui, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I hope, listeners, that you learned something about Japan. It's a fascinating place and a place I would always recommend people to go visit. And if you need any advice, talk to Rui.
Yes, just talk to me.
I want to make a few social media mentions now. We do have a Facebook page. The URL is facebook.com/intlvoicespodcast. You can follow us there. You can see updates on who our guests are going to be. You can give us some feedback, ask some questions, whatever you want to interact with us. We also have an Instagram. Our Instagram handle is international_voices, where we will also update and get some feedback from our listeners. Again, any questions or suggestions are always encouraged. We want to hear what you want to hear. So please stay tuned. We'll have another episode for you next week. And keep on listening. Thanks. Oh.